In a moment, War on Guns. A couple hours, we'll be talking with John Lott, plus we'll take your calls next hour with him on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, John Lott with us. John is the president of the newly formed Crime Prevention Research Center and an economist who has held research and teaching positions at the University of Chicago. Noted author. The latest work is called The War on Guns, a subject that is so timely today. John, welcome back to the show.
Well, great to talk to you as always. Thanks.
So I was watching all day long the various commentators trying to react to what Donald Trump had to say in North Carolina today, the liberal side, the conservative side, and I think people were taking this out of context. I will agree that Donald Trump sometimes doesn't think when he talks and says some very foolish things, but I don't think he was talking about endangering Hillary Clinton today. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, the whole thing just seems bizarre to me. I mean, let's say President Obama calls on people to oppose some bill that the Republicans want to have. Would you instantly jump to the fact that he's calling for those people to take up guns and kill the Republicans?
No. No, but in this case, you know, Trump was citing the Second Amendment, and he said Second Amendment supporters, they'll take matters into their own hands, literally, as he was basically.
Yeah, I think he said that they might be able to do something, is literally what he said, that they might be able to do something.
I think he meant in the voters' booth.
Right. Well, I mean, look, even if there had been some confusion, and I just don't know why people would think just because he says, you know, maybe these NRA supporters can go and do something, the people that supporting the Second Amendment can do something, why they would jump to them taking guns to shoot people, you know, but even if they had, the campaign immediately, within like minutes, put out a statement when reporters asked him about it, saying, no, that's not what we're saying. Trump did an interview with Sean Hannity shortly afterwards, and he was saying it never even dawned on him to go and think that he was trying to make that type of claim that
right.
People should go and get guns. So, I mean, I'm just saying, politicians all the time say, I hope we can defeat something. I hope we can get people out to the polls to go and stop something, or I hope we can stop it. It's just how many times would any other politician you even think of saying, well, maybe they're saying these guys should get guns to kill the opponents.
I don't think he's a very great spontaneous speaker, John. I think that's his biggest fault.
Well, I mean, the thing is, if they're looking for any possible misinterpretation that can be made.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, they take these little clips now. I'm wondering what's going to happen tomorrow. I mean, every day is something, whether it's Trump or Hillary. I stay nonpartisan, folks. I want to bring out the facts on both sides. But
you're very good about that. It's just that I was just listening the other day. Apparently, ABC, NBC, and CBS didn't cover this $400 million that was supposedly paid
to Iran. Yeah.
You know, so I'm just saying, this is a pretty unusual election. In terms of how things are covered.
It really is, and it's going to go right down to the wire. You know, people ask me, they did today, I was chatting with our Coast Insiders via computer tonight, and some people said, so who do you think is going to win? I said, well, I'll tell you who I think could win if the election were held today, but ask me Monday, November 7th, right before Tuesday's election, because I think it's going to go that far, John. What do you think?
Well, there's a lot at stake here. I mean, it's hard to think of another election where there's been this much at stake. You know, just with regard to the Second Amendment, I have to say I think Trump is right on that when he's talking about Hillary's views. Hillary, multiple times, has called for appointing members to the Supreme Court who would overturn the Heller and McDonald decisions. Now, you know what those are well, but just so everybody else knows,
go ahead.
Those were narrow decisions. What they said was, Washington, D.C. and Chicago could not completely ban all handguns, or could they ban all guns if they were to try to do something like that? So those were close decisions. There were 5-4 decisions, and now with Scalia's death earlier this year, whoever appoints his replacement is going to determine whether or not those cases are going to be overturned. I mean, there's already a case from California with regard to concealed carry that would allow the chance for them to overturn that if it got to the Supreme Court. And so the question is, if the Supreme Court says it's again possible for governments, whether it's federal, state, or local, to go and ban guns, I guess the question people have to ask is, what is left for the Second Amendment at that point?
True. Lots to talk about. And just to preface and be above board with everybody, I am, folks, as I've said before, a concealed weapons permit holder. I got it years ago from the state of Florida because of my military background. And most states, including Missouri and many of the other states I pop in and out of, have reciprocity with it. I do not believe California does. That's a tough state, but that's me. Just so everybody knows, I don't want to taint this interview with anything that you're not aware of. I'm a concealed weapons permit holder. As John Lott, how many other Americans? Millions.
Well, we just put together a report that we released last week, and it's over 14.5 million. There's been over a 1.7 million increase in just the last year. That's the largest increase that there's been. It's continued to increase at an increasing rate. I mean, just in 2007, there were about 4.6 million concealed carry permit holders. Plus, that understates the increase because now there are 11 states where you can carry without having to get a permit. And so that's a major change.
That is a huge change indeed. And, you know, with all these wackos that are popping out of the woodwork, it's kind of nice to know that you might have somebody in a crowd that is a concealed weapons permit holder or has one and might be able to stop something from really festering.
I couldn't agree more. Look, the notion that somehow you can have the police or military cover all the possible targets just is incredible. We have 600,000 police in this country. We have 320 million people. There's just no way you can cover all the possible targets. And I have a chapter in The War on Guns that goes through and points out not only the explicit statements for these killers that they make time after time about why they picked a place where victims weren't able to defend themselves. They do it. They say they do it because they want to kill as many people as possible, and they know the longer it takes for somebody to arrive on the scene with a gun, exactly the point you were raising, the more people they're going to be able to kill. But it's more than that. It's just not the anecdotal stories from these killers that they say time after time. It's also the statistical evidence. Since 1950, over 98% of the mass public shootings have taken place in areas where general citizens aren't allowed to have guns for protection.
That's a key point, John. We're going to come back, talk more about that. John Lott with us, his book, The War on Guns. Pleased to tell you that we still got some tickets available in Asheville, North Carolina, but they are going very quickly now because the event is just in a few weeks, August 27th. I'll be hightailing it from L.A. over there, and it's going to be a great show. Looking forward to it. Those of you in the greater Asheville area, come on by. Those of you from all over the place, come on by. Simply go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. Click the picture of the Asheville, North Carolina event. It's right there in the middle of the homepage. That'll take you into the theater. Look for the buy tickets, August 27th date, and then pick out your own seats and come on by. We're having a meet and greet right after the show, too, so definitely come up and talk to us. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with John Lott, Ph.D., his latest work, The War on Guns. And, John, tell us about this war on guns. Exactly what would they like to see happen?
Well, it's different than the legislative debates that we've had before. People like Michael Bloomberg and George Soros and others are spending literally hundreds of millions of dollars on financing research to go and support their positions. Bloomberg has worked it out with the Columbia University Journalism School to bring in reporters from around the country so that he can help teach them on how he thinks they should properly cover the gun issue. I mean, could you imagine the Columbia University working with the NRA so that the NRA could set up classes to properly teach reporters on how they think they should cover the gun issue? And But it's even beyond that. I mean, you have Soros and Bloomberg are just dramatically outspending the NRA in terms of television and radio advertising. The only year that I have complete numbers for, 2013, it's like a 7.4-to-1 ratio that all the gun rights groups were being outspent. And they're pushing a range of different types of laws, which I've come to believe primarily I'm focused on just making it more costly for people to be able to own guns, and in particular, make it more costly for basically law-abiding poor minorities from being able to own guns. You take something like these background checks on private transfers. In 2013, I was involved in Colorado where they were trying to get the bill passed at that time, and my idea was to go and put up an amendment that would exempt people below the poverty level from having to pay the new state tax on transferring guns. With the exception of two pro-gun Democrats in the state house, every other Democrat voted against exempting people below the poverty level from having to pay the new state tax. In Maryland, I tried to do a similar thing that I talk about in the War on Guns, where they were imposing about a $250 set of fees and taxes to go and register and license handguns. The Democrats wouldn't even let those amendments come up for a vote because they controlled two-thirds of both houses there. How many taxes can you think of where Democrats would fight tooth and nail against exempting people below the poverty level from having to pay?
Hey, John, let me ask you this, too, because, you know, we are so concerned about taking our guns away where the bad guys will be able to still get their guns. Some of these episodes lately of these mass shootings have occurred from people who really had no police records at all.
Right.
What do we do to stop people like that, or can you?
Well, I think, look, it'd be nice to kind of stop people in advance from getting these weapons, but what I think we need to talk more seriously about is what happens when that fails. What's your backup plan? And I think the point that we mentioned earlier, you just see these occur time after time in places where these killers know victims can't defend themselves. I have a list of cases in the book, but I'll give you one case that just occurred recently that that came out after I wrote that part of the book, and that was in Detroit. There was a father who was concerned about his son's involvement in ISIS, had told the FBI. The FBI put a tap on his phone, and they recorded an absolutely chilling conversation where he was talking about a planned attack on one of the largest churches in the Detroit area. He had cased the church, saw that they had large congregations each Sunday, and this top reason for going after them was that he had checked, and that church banned people being able to carry permanent concealed handguns on church property.
Jeez.
And he explicitly said, in chilling words, how that made it easier for him to kill people without anybody being able to stop. He had even checked to see how far the nearest police department was, police station, to get an idea how long it might take for the police to show up on the scene in order to be able to stop.
Was he on a suicide mission? I mean, did he not care about himself?
Yeah, he was doing this as a soldier of ISIS.
As a jihadist.
Right.
Jeez. Well, now let's look at where we are to date. It seems like every time they talk about controlling guns, or some rumor of controlling guns, gun sales go through the roof. They don't decline, they go up, don't they?
Right. No, we've had 15 straight months now of record sales that have been occurring. And we just mentioned earlier the number of concealed handgun permits. They've gone from 4.6 million in 2007 to over 14.5 million now. It's a huge increase. Part of that is the point that you're bringing up with regard to the threat of restrictions, but part of it is people realize, even though the police are extremely important, I think the police are the single most important factor, people realize that police have an impossible job when it comes to stopping these mass public shootings. You know, if you put a man in uniform, a guard, a police officer, military, in front of a target, these killers have huge strategic advantages. one option they have is to simply kill that person first before they go after other people. Or they can wait for the guard to leave, or they can pick some other target. You know, after the Charlie Hebdo attack last January in France, the president of France put 10,000 troops on the street of Paris. It may have made him feel good, but how are 10,000 troops, which, you know, have to be staggered, only a third are on the street at most at any one time, going to cover a city of 2.3 million people? It's simply impossible. And so, and as was proven later, there were three other mass public shootings in France after that initial attack on the Charlie Hebdo office. And also, the guard, there was a guard there at the Charlie Hebdo office, and he was the first person killed.
So where do we stand with what will happen with either candidate when they get elected, if they get elected?
Well, I think it's pretty dramatically different. I mean, Hillary Clinton has criticized concealed handguns. She says that she can't think of any reason why people should be carrying concealed handguns around. After things like the Paris attack last November, in which 130 people were killed, Donald Trump, as he has multiple times, has talked about the fact that wouldn't things possibly have been different if somebody there at the scene had had a gun to stop them? You know, at the theater where the shooting occurred, there were 8 off-duty police officers. None of them were allowed to carry their handguns with them off-duty.
Oh, God.
None of them, they were as helpless as anybody else in that audience. You know, somehow, you know, there are people around the world that trust officers when they're on duty, but somehow, as soon as they get off duty, we no longer trust them. And, you know, you had in the Charlie Hebdo attack when that occurred, you had people literally within 12 feet of these killers who were able to take movies of them on their cell phones, but could do nothing to stop them.
You know, John, if you're in a bank, you've got your concealed weapon, and the bank gets robbed, I think I would do nothing there because most of the times those people aren't there to shoot up and kill other people.
Right.
They want to rob the bank, get the money, and get out. And the bank's insured, so I wouldn't pull a gun in there because that's a little risky. But if you're in a mall or someplace, a theater, and somebody pulls out a gun, their intent is to kill people.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, you know, you lose $10,000 or $25,000 or $30,000. That's tiny compared to the value of a life for a person. But, you know, we had this attack in Orlando. Just 10 days after it, there was an attack that was tried in a South Carolina bar, nightclub there. We don't hear about that because what happened was after the first 3 shots of the person there, a permanent concealed handgun permit holder pulled out his gun and stopped the attacker. You know, 40 states allow people to go and carry permanent concealed handgun in places that serve alcohol like a nightclub.
Right.
Florida is one of the 10 that didn't.
That does not. And look what happened.
Right. But, you know, the thing is, this debate would be so much different if even once in a while the media would report that we've had yet another mass public shooting in a place where guns were banned. They refuse to bring this up. I can't tell you the number of times I've talked to news editors where they tell me, well, if they get into that, it'll be political. And I say, look, you know,
it's the fact.
I know.
Yeah.
And I think it's a relevant fact. And the thing is, so much of what they know within the first few hours of the attack ends up turning out to be wrong. It's difficult to know right away how the killer got the gun or what gun he was even using. The simplest thing, the simplest fact to figure out is, was it a gun-free zone? Either the law or a posting of signs out front, it's not that difficult to figure that out. You have binoculars. You can go and see, even if you can't get near the place, you can go and see whether or not it's posted. You know, and it's just, it's, but for some reason, even though it's the easiest thing, they refuse to do it. One of the things I have in the book is a list of mass public shootings that have been stopped in the United States by permanent concealed handguns, cases where police, sheriffs, or prosecutors have said that if not for the presence of the permit holder, multiple lives would have been lost. You know, you have dramatic cases from a downtown sidewalk in Chicago where a gang member starts shooting people on a busy sidewalk, and an Uber driver who just dropped off a fare gets out of his car and wounds the attacker. You have a case in South Carolina where volunteer firemen are having a kids' day where they're giving kids rides on the fire trucks, serving them ice cream.
Oh, yeah, they love doing that, too.
Right, and a man with a rifle came up, started firing. Fortunately, there were two of the volunteer firemen who had permanent concealed handguns, and they were able to stop them. Those stories like that only would get one or two local news stories, never would get national news coverage. Now, can you imagine if those volunteer firemen weren't there and the man there had been successful in killing people, how much mass national news coverage it would have gotten? I've even had cases that I talk about in the War on Guns where I've been able to go and point to film of an attack that was stopped. One in Conway, Georgia last year, where a man went into a liquor store and started firing, killed two people. Fortunately, there was a concealed carry permit holder that was walking by right outside the store when the attack occurred, ran in, on film, exchanged fire with the killer, forcing the killer to run out of the store. The sheriff, in the area said that without a doubt in his mind, the permit holder saved many lives. And yet, when I would try to go and get editors and major news outlets to go and do the film, you think this is something they have to do. It's riveting film of this hero going in and stopping the attack. The only comments I would get back, to the extent I could get comments, is, well, it would just be political for us to go and show something like that.
And isn't it true that most police officers, rank and file, prefer and support concealed weapon holders?
Well, you're exactly right. And the thing is, they're probably the strongest group in the country in terms of supporting people who have permits. There's a survey done by Police One in 2013 where they asked their members, they have about 450,000 members, what is the best thing to do to stop mass public shootings? And their number one thing was to go and get rid of gun-free zones. About over 80% of the people who did the survey said that getting rid of gun-free zones would either eliminate or reduce the casualties from mass public shootings. You know, if you want something, just look at the Fraternal Order Police, the questionnaire that they gave to the two presidential candidates. The National Fraternal Order Police asked the presidential candidates to pledge that the Second Amendment is sacrosanct and will in no way be modified in my administration. And they also wanted the candidates to agree to the statement that gun control laws are not the answer to gun violence. You may notice that Hillary Clinton, it just came out last Friday, wouldn't even apply for the endorsement for the National Fraternal Order of Police. It's the first time ever that a major presidential candidate hasn't even bothered to ask for the endorsement from the Fraternal Order of Police. Her husband in 1996 got their endorsement, and in 2012, they didn't endorse either Obama or Romney. So, I mean, it's something that Democrats have been successful at in the past, but at this time, Hillary Clinton didn't even bother to apply.
Those that are against guns, John, what is the reason? What do they cite as the reason they are opposed to gun ownership?
Well, I think they believe it makes things more dangerous, makes people less safe, and you know, there's a variety of reasons.
Is there a hidden agenda, though? Like, they figure if Americans don't have arms, they can't uprise when we try to take over.
Yeah, you know, who knows? I mean, I try to stay away from things about trying to figure out what people are thinking inside their head. I mean, I can go and
point You want the facts.
I can go and point to the consequences of their laws. I can go and say how this makes it costly and how it hurts the most vulnerable people in our society, the people who are most likely to be victims of violent crime or people who are relatively weaker physically from being able to go and defend themselves. But, you know, I guess there are a couple things I've come to believe, and that's just because I've spent lots of hours in green rooms. I've debated these guys over the years in many different forums. And that is, you know, a lot of these laws that they push, the reason why they push it isn't because they really believe it's going to reduce crime. The reason why they push them is because it's going to reduce gun ownership. You know, I mentioned before these taxes and fees. One of the things I've pointed out for a decade or so to gun control advocates, if they really want to get things like their background checks on private transfers passed, they could easily get it passed if they just made a few simple changes. One is, if they really believe it reduces crime, it's going to reduce crime for everybody, not just the guy who's buying the gun. And as an economist, what I would say is that it should be the people who benefit from the government action who are the ones who pay for it. So pay for it out of general revenue rather than just putting the entire tax on the guy who's buying a gun. You bring that up to them, they'll go nuts. I mean, I bring it up to them. I say, look, you want to get this passed? I can help you get this passed. I can tell you what you can do in order to get this passed. Another thing that they can do is the current system is a complete mess. Last week when Hillary Clinton was saying that there are 2.4 million dangerous or prohibited people that have been stopped from buying guns because of background checks, that's simply false. What she should say is that there have been 2.4 million initial denials, and that virtually all of those, about 99% of them, are false positives. It's one thing to stop somebody who is a felon from buying a gun. It's another thing to stop someone simply because they have a similar name to a felon. Now, that could be fixed. That could be easily fixed. You know, if you're a private company and you do criminal background checks on your employees, if you had a mistake rate that was 100th the mistake rate for the federal government with background checks, the company would be sued out of existence under federal law. All you have to do is make the government have to obey the same rules for background checks that they force on private companies. What would you do? Well, when you buy a gun, as you know, you have to put in your Social Security number. Use that in doing the background check. Just don't use, quote, a similar name, which doesn't even mean you don't even have to have the same middle names, and the birthday. Use the address that the person has to go and do the background check. You know, if they put in a false address or if it doesn't match the name there, you know, the person's going to get stopped.
Hold on, John. We're going to come back and talk more and take calls with you next.